Sometimes the only way to get the job you really want is to create it for yourself. I work with writers all around the world, and one particular writer came to me with an idea. He was an expert in these incredible monuments found across Eastern Europe, and he proposed that we start leading tours of them. The first tour he ever ran was through Bulgaria in the middle of winter, and we had no idea if it would work. But incredibly, we sold the tour out, and we got to take a group to see amazing places all across the country. Today, he's run over a dozen tours with Atlas Obscura. He designed his own job, and in doing so, he showed me what was possible, a universe of opportunity. I'm Dylan Thuris, co-founder of the travel site Atlas Obscura. As someone who started a company that encourages people to travel and explore the world, I love that more people are considering a move abroad. But it's one thing to make the decision and another to take the first steps to do it. So how do people do it? How do you actually take your entire job and life abroad? This is So You Want to Work Abroad, a podcast from Cole Haan and T Brand Studio at the New York Times. This episode, I'm going to speak with co-founder of the Muse career development site, Catherine Minshew, and expat transition coach, Katia Vlahos, to explore how to make it happen, what you need to think about in order to find a job or convince your boss to transfer you to that foreign office you've always pictured yourself in. How can you transform daydreaming about working in another country into reality? If anyone can lend insight on how to make those daydreams come true, it's Catherine Minshew. Catherine is the CEO and co-founder of The Muse. The Muse is a global job search platform that serves over 50 million users worldwide. She's also the author of The New Rules of Work, the modern playbook for navigating your career, and hosts a podcast by the same name. Catherine, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
So tell me about The Muse. What is it and who is it for?
So The Muse is a career platform to help people find jobs they love. And I started the business around 8 years ago because, frankly, because I needed it and it didn't exist. The slightly longer version is I was so frustrated by the fact that typical job boards just dumped thousands of undifferentiated job listings on a, you know, unsuspecting job seeker. And it seemed to me like there was an opportunity to help people research companies and careers, get great advice, see inside a business's offices, and understand a little bit about the culture of a company before you apply. And that could actually help employers hire candidates who were more in tune with their values, their culture, their way of doing work.
So how did your experiences working abroad yourself lead you to founding The Muse and helping others find the right career fit for them?
Yeah, well, I've always been interested by how people understand what they want to do with their lives. And for myself, I initially thought I wanted to work in the Foreign Service or the CIA. I spent some time working at a U.S. embassy in Cyprus before then doing management consulting at McKinsey, which was a complete 180. But I think I was looking for what is the day-to-day work and the context in which I work that's going to be professionally fulfilling. After I left McKinsey, I ended up working for the Clinton Health Access Initiative in Kigali, Rwanda, working on vaccine introduction. And throughout all of these experiences, I was just fascinated by how do people make the career decisions they do? And I would look on these job boards and be so frustrated with how bad, frankly, I felt the user experience was. And so I thought about creating my own. And that's really where the idea for The Muse came from.
So what about the experience with the Clinton Health Initiative? What was that like for you? And how did that fit in your kind of evolution of understanding work?
Yeah, well, first of all, I love working abroad because I think it exposes you to so much more of the world. And it really creates a deep adaptability, I think, in an individual. So I'm a huge proponent of it. I specifically wanted to work in Africa because I was in my mid-20s. I didn't yet have a family. And I thought, if I don't go now, it might be harder to go in the future. So let's seize the opportunity and see what I can learn. And again, luckily, having studied French and at that point being fairly fluent, I was specifically looking at Francophone countries so that I could benefit from the work I'd done to learn this language and also communicate more easily. I actually ended up talking my way into that job by pitching essentially several executives at the Clinton Health Access Initiative to give me a 6-month expenses-only position. Now, that was not something they typically did, but by speaking to a lot of people in my network, telling different individuals, I'm looking for a role overseas, I'd love to work with an organization like the Clinton Foundation, I was able to eventually network my way to people who worked in one of the new initiatives there at CHAI, which is the acronym for the Clinton Health Access Initiative. And it was a vaccine introduction program, and it was very new. And so I said, look, I don't need a salary. But I also don't necessarily know that I want to commit to 1 or 2 years overseas. Why don't you pay just my expenses? Fly me there, put me up in just normal housing, food, transit, only the basics. I do not need to live lavishly. And you don't have to pay me a dime else. And at the end of 6 months, if it's working really well, we can renegotiate. And if it's not, you'll have gotten really hard work from me and it won't have cost you very much. And somehow they said yes, which I am still very grateful for because it was really a great opportunity. It was actually in many ways a much easier initial transition because another employee of CHAI who was based in Kigali immediately took me under his wing and said, okay, we're doing a BYO meat barbecue. So everyone brings their own meat. We're going to grill it. Just kind of, you know, having someone who gives you the lay of the land is so powerful. And so I was really able to hit the ground running.
You seem like a pretty determined person to me, but were there any moments in either Cyprus or Rwanda where you thought, I don't know if I can do this. I'm not sure I'm going to stick it out.
I think because I was so absolutely focused on the learning, I was able to look past a lot of the fear or the discomfort and say, I am putting myself in a deliberately uncomfortable situation because I know I'm going to grow and I know I'm going to learn from it. And it has the benefit also of saying, you know, if you can navigate inter-office politics in a foreign country with 5 different nationalities and 2 different government agencies, you can definitely ace that back home in the U.S.
How did founding the Muse inform your global perspective?
When I built the Muse, I deliberately wanted us to welcome job seekers and career seekers from all over the world. So while the core of the business was initially US focused, we both worked on making sure that the resources we offered and the jobs we offered were international. And so, frankly, I think we're only scratching the surface. And I think as the Muse continues to grow, one of the things I want to put at the core of our experience is letting people imagine themselves in these different roles and offices, both within their own country and also internationally.
So say I'm someone who is looking to work abroad. How do I get started about doing that? How should I begin the process of finding work abroad?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I just want to hark back to something I said before, which I think is it's important to sit just a little bit of time, sit with yourself and think, why am I interested in this? Is it because I want the adventure and the boundary pushing and to develop some skills around adaptability and resilience? Is it that in my career path, working abroad is a requirement or an accelerator, and therefore I'm doing this for a very specific professional purpose? Is it something else entirely, to improve communication skills or to live the dream, freelancing on a beach in Costa Rica? There are a lot of different versions or flavors of what working abroad can be. And I think the more you can tap into what's driving you, the better that will guide your decisions. Then I think there's sort of 2 or 3 major approaches that I see people take. The first is looking to work with a specific company and have that company take you abroad. Now, in many ways, this can be the easiest because organizations, particularly global organizations, are set up to transfer their employees around. So they can help you understand visa requirements. They might provide a relocation package. They can set you up with colleagues in your new location. And there are a lot of international organizations that are willing or interested in hiring American citizens to go and work abroad for a variety of reasons. So that's sort of one path, which we can talk more about. Secondly, there are a variety of organizations, agencies, programs, et cetera, that help people find work abroad. So we can talk more about what those are and how to use them. And then finally, we see people choosing to freelance. And this can be both the most freeing, but also the most difficult, because when you're freelancing, really, you have to be responsible for understanding work regulations, visa regulations. It can be very isolating, but it can also give you the maximum flexibility to live and work in different cultures without having to necessarily fully commit to 40 plus hours a week within a specific single organization.
So
As people go through this process, what are some of the obstacles that they might run into? How can they convince their employer, for example, to let them move to a different office? Or if they're going freelance, what kind of paperwork do they need to start thinking about getting in order?
Oh my goodness. Well, you've just asked the million-dollar question. So there's a number of different layers. Let's first deal with the relational or convincing, and then we can talk tactical. So how do you convince your employer to let you work abroad? There are going to be slightly different processes, obviously, for different employers. But I would start first by, as simple as it is, pull up your resume, think about what accomplishments you've had, what skills you've had, what are the things that you as an individual could bring to your employer in a new context, and why would it benefit them? So for example, being able to pitch your boss or your company's HR department on how working for a year or an indefinite period of time in your company's Italian office or UK office or Tokyo office will allow you to bring best practices back or to help that office perhaps adopt some of the innovations that your office has seen, you know, very successfully improve efficiency, reduce costs, et cetera. Thinking about pitching this in the language of business can help you get a leg up. Because at the end of the day, as much as it might be personally fulfilling to you to work abroad, it's not always your HR department's job or your boss's job to personally fulfill you. They're thinking about the business needs. And then make sure it's a dialogue, because even if the opportunity is not open today, there may be something in the future that opens up, and you've now put yourself at the top of the list to take advantage of that opportunity.
Absolutely. So what about the pros and cons of applying for jobs from home versus on the ground when you get there? Should you just jump and go to the place and start looking for work, or is it better to spend time sort of doing research and making calls from wherever you're located now?
So I think to some extent, that's a question about an individual's risk appetite. One of my colleagues had tried to find a job working in global health in East Africa from the United States and wasn't able to do so. And so bought a one-way ticket and showed up on the ground in Kigali. This was, I think, probably about a year before I got there. Started meeting people, started asking for intros, and I believe ended up having a job offer within 3 to 4 weeks because he was there. You know, he was physically able to build relationships, build connections, and demonstrate that he could get things done. But not everyone is going to be comfortable with that level of uncertainty and risk. It is certainly easier in many cases to get a job when you're already on the ground in a country, but it can be very stressful to show up in a place that you don't know. But I would say that for an individual who's considering this, I would evaluate what is the country that you're interested in going to and how difficult or easy is it to get work authorization. If it's a country that's very easy, that makes it simpler to simply go. If it's a country where work authorization could take some time, I would highly recommend starting to work on that process before you leave home. And then secondly, what budget do you have for paying your living expenses before you find something? And again, this depends on the country you're going to. It's much more expensive in many places in Asia or Europe to pay for an apartment, pay for living expenses before you have a job, versus if you're interested in, for example, working in Rwanda, where I was.
What about networking? One of the challenges is often this exact thing. If you're not in the country, that's very hard to do. And if you don't speak the language, that's even harder. So what advice do you have for people who are arriving in a new place? Maybe they have a job, but they don't have a network, or they're looking to build their network in their new home country. What should people do?
Yes. So first of all, before you leave, I think there's a few steps you can take. And then after you arrive, another set of recommendations. Before you leave, when you're still here, let's say in the United States, firstly, college alumni systems can be incredibly helpful for helping you understand whether there are others from your university or from your hometown, high school, et cetera, who might be living or working in a particular country or region abroad. Again, I would recommend extensive Googling, especially looking for things like, for example, in Kigali, Meetup Kigali, Expats Kigali, fun things to do in Kigali. You get the drill. There are 1,000 searches that you could look for, but you'll start to get a sense of where are the sites that people frequent, what are the activities. I recommend showing up for a lot in the beginning because you're already out of your comfort zone, so why not push it a little bit further? Go to things, say yes to people, ask for help and guidance. I think most humans really genuinely like helping others, and especially if you're talking to someone who's been new in this place before, many people are going to be really happy and willing to give you their tips. And then finally, whether you're on the ground somewhere or you're simply thinking about moving abroad, I'm a big believer in just finding ways to work what it is that you need or want into conversation. So I'll give you a silly example, but in the early days of the Muse, at one point I was looking for a partnership with Yahoo. People kept saying, you know, people are like, oh, Catherine, how are you doing? And I'm like, oh, I'm doing great, working hard, trying to get a partnership with Yahoo. You know, how are you? And 90% of conversations, it just moves on. But 10% are like, oh, I know someone at Yahoo. My, you know, sister's postman's friend works there. And so similarly, you know, if you're thinking about moving abroad or you are there, but you're looking to build more of a network, just finding ways to mention that to as many people as possible increases essentially the surface area of your luck. All of these connections are so powerful because they help you feel like you have a little bit more of a grounding system of relationships when you show up somewhere.
Did you get the deal with Yahoo?
I did.
Nice. So you've taken a lot of risks in your life. You've taken jobs that have brought you all over the world. You started your own company. What would you say to someone who is longing to do this, longing to work abroad, but they're just worried about the risk, worried about the change it will bring to their life?
I would tell people, what is the worst that can happen? Think about what this risk could look like if it goes right and what this risk could look like if it goes wrong. If you remove the sort of freak accident of any of us could be hit by a car tomorrow, anywhere, the risks of moving abroad and having it not work out are that you're kind of unhappy. Maybe you have to come back. Like at the end of the day, none of that's going to kill you. And yet, you know, if you have, I think, this desire or this call inside you, ignoring it is usually not the way to happiness. You only get one life, and I would personally always rather try the thing. And if I don't like it, then that's great. I've learned that I don't like it. And in many cases, you love it, and it opens you up to a path that your life takes that you never thought possible.
Well, thank you so much for coming and giving all of these incredible, useful answers to people who maybe want to work abroad.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Now I'm like, need to plan a trip or something. I'm all jazzed up. I really hope people take it seriously. I think many people are so much more capable of working abroad than they may think.
This show is presented by Cole Haan. You want to move abroad, but instead of booking your flight and heading overseas, you're stuck planning for months, if not years, on getting a visa and organizing your finances, dealing with finding a place to live. That's why it's important to have the tools that keep you organized and moving forward. Cole Haan powers the ambitions of working professionals everywhere. Why not take the leap? So Catherine's covered great tips about the job search based on her own experience working abroad and as a leader of a job search company. I also wanted to talk to someone who's on the other side, an expert who helps people who found a new job actually make the transition. So I spoke with Katia Vlahos. Katia is an expat transition coach. She works with individuals, HR teams, and relocation services to help expats settle into their new lives abroad. And she's an expat herself. She was born in Cameroon, raised in Greece, and has lived all over the world. Currently, she's calling in from Zurich, Switzerland. So Katia, you help people transition into new jobs abroad. Can you give us a sense of the types of career changes you see? How are the people you coach taking their careers global?
Here we start with, first of all, what's your goal for moving? Is it to work for a big global company? Is it to start your own business? Is it to be a freelancer? And then you kind of fine-tune it with, you know, depending on where you are right now, what's your job situation? What's your path? These days, there's so many more models, I call it models of mobility, different options when you move abroad. So we don't only have the typical expat model where, you know, you move for 3 years or 4 years to a place and then your company moves you to the next place for another 3-4 years. And at some point, you go back home. Now you still have that, but you also have other types of mobility.
What are some of the different ways of easing into working abroad if maybe you're not quite ready to go all in?
You can do short-term projects between, 3 and 6 months and then go on to the next short-term project. So you live, very short periods in each place. Or you could have a model where, especially if you have a family where you live in one place, maybe you live at whatever you call home, and you commute to a different place for work. And so you're gone, Monday through Thursday or Monday through Friday, spend your weekends at home. So different models, different implications to take into account, but it's good to start with a basic idea of what you want to do, where you want to go, how you see yourself. It's not necessarily a simple process because you have to convince people to hire you from a distance, right, and move you over. It's a little bit easier when you're already working for a company and you get them to transfer you abroad. But when you're starting from scratch, then you just have to have a lot of patience and you do get rewarded in the end, but it's a long process.
So when you're talking to people who aren't as well traveled as you and are kind of thinking, oh my God, I might actually want to move abroad, work abroad. How do I do this? What's the first question you think someone should ask themselves?
It's really important to start with why, like what's your purpose? I call it the intention for moving because it not only helps give you some direction when you make decisions about where to move or when to move or all the different decisions that come along the way, but I think it's, having an intention also helps you through the tough times. And every move can be stressful. It can be overwhelming. The rule is that all sorts of unexpected things happen. I mean, it's not the exception. It's the rule. And it's important to have something that grounds you. And that reminds you why you're doing this. I mean, moves are also like really exciting, thrilling, rewarding adventures, but they're also challenging. So I think having sort of this guiding light, which is your intention, it comes from within, is really important.
What are some examples of intentions that people have set?
Right. So maybe you want to move because you think it's going to be good for your career. Maybe another intention is, like I said, to live the adventure. Maybe it is to offer your family a different set of experiences, a different perspective, especially if you have children. Maybe you want to kind of broaden their horizons. Maybe it's personal growth. It's very individual. Maybe you're moving for love. Maybe you're following somebody around the globe. So maybe that's your why for moving.
Hmm.
It's important to know that and be connected to that.
Is there a good way, a right way to do a kind of nomadic lifestyle?
Absolutely. I mean, that's becoming more and more common with the gig economy, or I think just knowing how to create home or being intentional about how to create home and how to find home within yourself at the end of the day is a really good thing to have when you lead a nomadic life. The other thing that we haven't talked about yet has to do with career. And it's important that your career is portable, that you can take it with you wherever you go. And by that, I don't mean only that you can do it from anywhere. I mean that your whole business model is movable in the sense that, for example, in my case, even if I move location, my clients are, as a coach, my clients, very few of them are based in Zurich. Most of them are all around the world. So wherever I am, it doesn't change my ability to work, but that's a portable career. And that can be a huge advantage because when you move around, you don't have to set up your business, especially if it's your own business. You don't have to set it up from the beginning.
The idea of a portable career is brilliant. I hadn't really thought about that. Thank you so much for your time, Katya. It was really good to talk to you.
Thank you, Dylan. I really enjoyed it.
If you're feeling inspired by listening to Catherine and Katya, and you want to jump into searching for work opportunities, here are three things you can do to take action. 1, write down your intention so you have a why. That will become your guiding light through this process. 2, put some thinking into how you want to take your career abroad. Start thinking about timing. Have you spoken to your company about a transfer? It may take some time, so it's better to start that conversation sooner rather than later. And 3, if you want to go the independent route, start looking at opportunities online. If you're looking to go freelance or nomadic, start connecting with local expats who can help you form a game plan. So You Want to Work Abroad is a podcast from Cole Haan in collaboration with T Brand Studio at the New York Times.
Many thanks to Catherine Minshew and Katia Vlahos. Have a question for me or one of the guests? Send us an email at workabroadpodcast@nytimes.com or leave us a voicemail at 646-481-0357. And your question may be featured on a future episode. Next episode, I'll be talking to Chef Rocio Sanchez, a renowned chef who went from a job at one of the world's most influential restaurants in New York to work at a restaurant often called the world's best in Copenhagen. Today, she has her own Mexican eateries in the city. I'll get the scoop from her on how she went from growing up in a Mexican-American household in Chicago to cooking for Nordic palates.
When I started working there, there were like two people from every country, which was, I always joked around. It was like Noah's Ark. It was all over the place. So you have to speak in English.
Subscribe to So You Want to Work Abroad so you don't miss a single episode. And leave us a review. It helps other people to find the show. Thank you for listening. If this episode inspired you to embark on a remote working adventure, great. But you're going to need gear that effortlessly transitions from business to leisure to whatever's beyond. It's a tricky combo to pull off, so it's a good thing there's Cole Haan. Cole Haan's shoes, bags, and outerwear will make getting dressed the easiest part of your trip. Find solutions for working, traveling, and working while traveling when you visit colehaan.com.